Hello everyone and welcome back to The Stage Place. Today I am joined by Richard Parsons and Kerry Scorer, two Gloucestershire-based magicians who usually form part of the stage show Evening of Deception, a magic show which, due to the coronavirus, has now been brought online for the aptly named Evening Inn of Deception, which stars Richard, Kerry and a couple more magicians all based around the magic circle. The Evening Inn of Deception has been playing over the past few weeks and months to venues all across the country, with one of the big packages that the Evening of Deception allows for portions of the ticket sales to go to the venues themselves. Richard and Kerry, I'd like to welcome you both to this stagey place.
Thank you.
Hi Elliot, thanks for having us.
Oh, no worries guys, thank you so much for coming on. So Richard and Kerry, can you talk me through your journeys into magic and how you came about deciding that you wanted to invest a career within this industry?
Okay, so my career in magic started probably later than most people. I think the traditional magician story is, you know, granddad showed them a trick and then they had a magic set and then, you know, progressed through their childhood and just got into magic, you know, from early years. But actually mine was slightly different. I was a therapist at the time and had my own practice. And a guy, I didn't even know he did magic actually. I was at a hypnotherapy conference and a guy showed me a magic trick, a guy called Mark Vasey. He was a brilliant magician and member of the Magic Circle. And he showed me a trick and it blew me away. And I basically pestered him for months and months and months. And in the end, as this was in my sort of 20s, in the end, he sent me a book and a couple of decks of cards and said, study that and I'll talk to you in 6 months' time. And that was my introduction, really. So I just became a bit obsessed with it and you know, studied the book. And yeah, it sort of started off as a hobby as an adult. And then eventually I started getting paid events and then met Kerry and we've known each other for many years.
So for me, a little bit different. So although I also got into it sort of in later life, I've always loved magic, grew up watching Paul Daniels. I always wanted to be Debbie McGee because I loved the dresses and the shoes and the glitter and just all of that thing. Yeah, so that's kind of what I wanted to do. And then I'm from Hull originally, and there's magic clubs all around the UK. I joined Hull Magicians Club and they took me under their wing and they taught me some cool tricks, which I thought, you know, it's quite nice just to have as a hobby. I didn't expect to sort of do it as a job either. And I just got introduced to people, met people, and it became what it is now. And I've been doing it full time now for 18 years, and I love it.
And how did you, Kerry and Richard, get to know each other? I know we spoke about this the other day in our pre-interview. I'd love the listeners to get to know how you knew each other, because I think it's a really brilliant story.
I think the story is better from Kerry.
She knows okay. Kerry.
All right, so how I met Richard. So I moved I live in Newark now in Gloucestershire, and I moved here a few years ago now and met up with a group of girls, and they were going on a hen night, and they messaged me the next day and they were like, oh, we're at this hen night and there was a magician and all this. And I said, oh, all right, you know, who was it? And I said, did you get his card? Yeah, who was it? Richard Parsons. I didn't know who he was. I was fairly new to the area, didn't know him and stuff. And I said, all right. I said, was he good? Yeah. No, he's brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah, really good, really good. And I said, oh, did you tell him that he was good? No. And it really made me chuckle, you know, and they were like, but we told him that we knew you, you know, and it, for a magician as well, it is always funny, but also it can be quite unnerving when people go, my friend's a magician. Do you know them? And stuff. So, you know, it's quite funny. But I was like, oh, so you didn't tell him he was good then, you didn't, you know, and they were like, no. So I rang him. I was at a job like a few nights later and I got there early and I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to ring him. So I Googled him, found his number, rang him, and obviously Richard was working as well. So it just went straight to his voicemail. So I just left this really garbled message of going, hi, I'm Kerry Scorer. You don't know me, but I'm a magician as well. You did some magic for my friend there. And this long, convoluted message of like randomness, but telling him that, you know, basically a weirdo stranger ringing you up telling you that, you know, that somebody had seen you at a hen do and you were amazing and stuff, but they didn't tell you, so I'm telling you. And that's kind of the message. Didn't really expect him to ring me back, but he did. We've been friends, it's got to be 10 years now, is it?
Oh, at least, yeah. I think that hen night, they were quite a rowdy bunch as well, by the way, but that hen night I think was one of my earliest paid gigs, I think. It was very early on in my career. I wasn't full-time at that point. I was still doing therapy and then doing a little bit of magic at the weekends kind of thing. But yeah, just had a lovely message and we've been really good friends ever since and worked together a lot with corporate events. We travel together, you know, we have lots of road trips and lots of fun. And, you know, she's my best friend in magic and in the real world as well. So, yeah, just sometimes you just click with people, don't you? And I think she nags me more than my real wife.
Probably.
Especially with directions.
And so, Richard and Kerry, talking about the real world, you two are a part of Evening of Deception, which is a show that usually comes around annually to the Everyman Theatre in Cheltenham around February, March time. Did you want to chat a little bit about what the Evening of Deception is and how you managed to form it together to create the show with other magicians?
So Evening of Deception first came about, it was the brainchild of Steve Nibbs and also another magician friend of ours, Andy Gladwin. And it was performed every year on stage, as you said, at the Everyman. And then I performed in it 1 year, a few years ago, and we only did like four shows, but you become this little family of people and it's great and you don't want it to end. And then I got the chance to do it again a few years later. And I was talking to Rich, we were in a shop, I think, weren't we, Rich? And then they said, oh, do you want to do it again? And I was like, yeah. And they was like, oh, can you recommend anybody? And I was like, hang on, Rich, do you want to do this thing? Because I have faith in this guy, I really do. And I always know that whenever he says yes to anything, he will put his heart and soul into it. And he does, and he did. And you said yes, didn't you? And you did the show. And we loved it. And then they did it again this year, and we weren't in it, but we were there. I was helping backstage and you came in, didn't you, to watch the show and stuff. Because it is just this lovely, lovely family. It really is. You know, we know Steve and Paul really well. That's Steve Nibbs and Backstage Paul, as we call him. Yeah, and it's just been really lovely. And the magicians that we have in always fit in really well. You know, it all just gels and it's just really nice.
Yeah, and it's become very well known in the area, hasn't it? So because we do the stage show every year for real in the small studio theatre in the Cheltenham Everyman. Actually, we find that quite a lot of people come every year and, you know, the tickets always sell out really, really quickly. You know, there's lots of amazing acts, you know, all professional magicians. It's got quite a nice sort of fan base, really. Yeah, that's how the idea came about, was based on the real stage show. Obviously, we're not quite sure whether it's going to go ahead for real in February 2021. Yeah. We hope so, but depending on what's happening with theatres by then.
Yeah, and for listeners who may or may not know out there, aside from my freelancing as a stage manager and lighting designer, I've also been working front of house at the Everyman in Cheltenham since October 2013. And what you were just saying there about the big following, I have seen that through your shows that you come with every year. You have this big fan base. And what to you do you think is the reason why people keep coming back? Because for me, I love magic being in smaller spaces. And with the Everyman having the Irving Studio, you really get to see that close-up magic. So for you as magicians, why do you like performing in front of those small audiences all the time? There must be a real market for it when you're seeing all these faces in the audience.
So for me personally, it was a challenge because my whole career has really been close-up magic and wedding magic and corporate events and private parties. And I will do parlour shows to small groups, so in a private dining room or something like that. But one of the reasons why I agreed to do it last year when Kerry mentioned it is to challenge myself as a performer. I'd never been on stage before properly. I'd never really done stage magic. So for me, it was an opportunity to get out of my comfort zone and develop an act and, you know, learn more about stage work and stagecraft. And I also think it's one of those things, isn't it, Kerry, where if you have a deadline, because when we decided to go on it, I think it was like September or something, and February 2019 seemed ages away, and then all of a sudden it was coming around quick, wasn't it? So I think having a deadline helped, you know, develop an act, and I think I've grown as a performer because of it. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do it. And I think, like anything, music or theatre or performing, I think anything is better live. Magic on TV is great, but it's even better live. You know, you're in there, you're part of it. I think that's why the audiences come back every time, is because they're part of the show. Without them, we can't do it. So they're on stage, they're helping out. Even though we might do the same show every night, it feels different because the audience reacts differently, they say different things. So it's just a really fun, family-friendly show, and it's a pleasure to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely with what Richard just said, and for me, it is the intimacy still of, although it's stage and it is a step up above from doing close-up magic, as in size-wise, you know, going from sort of small groups and things to the Avon Theatre, that's still quite a jump, but it's not quite, you know, I love that theatre just because of how intimate it is. You can see the people on the back row, you know, you can chat to them, and you know, we are very chatty within our acts, and, you know, and yeah. we chat to people and we get people up and we do stuff, and other people will shout things out and they get involved and things, and it's nice because it's just like a big group, really. And I think even for them, I talk about us sort of being this family, but I think for the audiences, they recognize, you know, each other when they come in, and they know people, you know, we have regulars, you know, we'll go out and speak to them at the end, and there's always, you know, some people that have been year in, year out, they message you beforehand and they're, oh, can't wait to see your show, you know, we came last year and we can't wait to see this one and stuff. So it is really nice. It is just, yeah, like a nice group, really.
So that's the stage show, Evening In of Deception. And recently it was announced in lockdown that you'd both be performing in an Evening In of Deception, which is the full performance, just like you'd see in the theatre, but this time from the comfort of audiences' homes and raising money with each performance to the theatres in which you programme the show to. Kerry, I know we spoke the other day that this idea was yours. So did you want to just talk about how you came about the idea and how you pitched it to Richard and the other magicians who are doing the show it virtually with Zoom, plus what kind of package you give to the theatres for those who may be listening and want to produce and program the show during this lockdown time that we're in at the moment?
So, in all honesty, it was one of those in the shower moments where all great decisions are thought of and made and stuff. And I, and because I've been doing my Zoom show for a little bit, I've done another show with some singers and things. And I was thinking, you know, what can we do, what can we do? And I'd been chatting to Richard and, you know, and we were sort of saying about there'd been no work and stuff. And I was saying to him about, you know, getting a Zoom show together and things. And then I sort of thought about, you know, Evening of Deception. And I thought, we could do this online. There is no reason why we couldn't, because everything, you know, we could all work from our own homes and do it online. And then, of course, I mean, just putting that 1-2-letter word in and making it Evening In of Deception, I'm really proud of. I thought, right, okay, before I kind of ran away with it, I spoke to my husband, because my husband's a really good sounding board, and he'll tell me whether I've gone off on, you know, some weird tangent of an idea that, you know, we can't possibly do. And he was like, oh, it sounds like a really good idea. So yeah. I approached Steve first, because I thought, well, without him, you know, we don't have a show. So I spoke to him. And I was kind of, I think every time I spoke to somebody, I was expecting somebody to go, ah, yeah, but what about this? And I'd go, oh, yeah, no. But nobody did. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, that's quite a good idea. We could do that. So I was like, right, okay. So then I got Richard and I was like, what do you think? And he's like, I haven't got a Zoom show. Can you get one? Yeah. Right. Excellent. And then we just found out, you know, we approached Mark, who's our headline act, Mark Shortland, and it's just gone from there. We messaged Paul as well to make sure that he was on board. And actually for him, he first said, because he moves all the stuff on and off stage for us. And of course, there's nothing to move on and off stage because we're all in our own homes. And we thought that might not be anything much for him to do, but it turns out he's got like the biggest job now. So he does all the tech stuff and he helps people mute themselves and unmute themselves and pins the videos and lets everybody in at the beginning, sends out the Zoom links and stuff like that. So actually, he's actually the most important person in our show.
So we decided to try and help the theatres as well as help ourselves. So being brutally honest, the Zoom show does allow the three of us as professional performers to earn a little bit of money. You know, we're all self-employed. We haven't earned very much since March, apart from maybe taking a couple of new deposits for a booking or something. So, but at the same time, we know that theatres are in a bit of a pickle, really, that they're stuck at the moment. There's lots of trending hashtags, aren't there? Save the Arts and Save the Arts UK. And I think people are starting to realise that actually the whole industry has really, really suffered badly. You know, especially some of the smaller independent theatres, you know, they rely on ticket sales. And of course, it's not just the performers, it's the backstage people, the front of house. You know, and so many productions employ so many people. So again, it was Kerry's idea to approach theatres and say to them, you know, it's a £15 ticket for the household or for the device for Zoom. So that's not per person, that's £15 for the whole house to watch. And the theatre gets £5 from every ticket. And a lot of people have said to me, that's very generous, but we don't mind because we're getting something out of it. They're getting quite a lot out of it. And apart from really using their booking systems, there's very little that theatres need to do apart from, you know, put it on their website. I've been doing the press releases. Kerry's been in contact with lots and lots of different theatres and emails and phone calls. So really any theatre that wants to have us, that they don't really need to do an awful lot. We can do almost most of it. So yeah, that's what the theatre gets from it. So obviously the more tickets we sell, the more they make, which is great.
And just to add to that again with the theatres, so we send them, once the theatre has said yes and we've agreed on a date, I send them a template that they can then, so when people buy a ticket, that's the information they will get sent, and it has our email address on it, because we will then send out the Zoom link, and it says on it, you know, any inquiries, any problems or questions, so they contact us. And also we send out the Zoom link as well, so the theatre doesn't have to do anything with that. If they do contact the theatre, they can just pass them our way again. We send them a graphic for their website and for their newsletter and things. We send them the text for their newsletter and for their website, and we can send them anything else that they want as well. We also ask for some photos from the theatre from them as well. So when we have our graphics on, when we do the show, we do a little bit of a quiz, or a, you know, we can ask questions about the theatre, or, but you know, we help promote it there as well. And obviously Steve's got some information about the theatre that he then, when he's doing his intro, you know, he sort of welcomes everybody to whichever theatre we are. But the great thing about it is it's one ticket per household. Everybody has a front row seat, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody gets to see the show as close up as they want to see it, so, which is, you know, fantastic really. So it's great. And you know, we would love to have more theatres on board if anybody wants to, you know, get in contact with us. There is literally no outlay at all from the theatre, apart from some time just putting the tickets out. Mm-hmm. We also advertise it all on our social medias and things like that as well, so we help promote it. And yeah, you know, there's no minimum. If we sell 8 tickets for a show, then we still do it. It's a full-on show. It does mean that those 8 screens will get involved quite a lot, but you know, apart from that, it's fine. So we don't profess that we can sell out 20 nights and things like that and make thousands and thousands of pounds of money for the theatres, but hopefully we can do a little bit. And as Richard said as well, you know, we're 3 performers that are full-time self-employed, so it's helping us, but also helping the theatres a little bit as well.
Yeah, and how, I think you've answered it a little bit, but how do you find the chemistry with the audiences from the stage show now compared to the virtual show? Because I think it must be a little bit weird, like you say, you've got these audiences that pay for their tickets, they've got their front row seats, but how do they actually interact with the show itself? Because you must have some regular audience members who come and see your shows at the Everyman Theatre, and there may be new audiences and new families that are all together, because this is a family-suitable show. How do they react, and how do you pick who you want for each of your magic tricks?
Okay, so the honest answer, Elliot, is we don't really know. But one sort of insight, backstage insight I can give you is that when people log on, so when they buy the ticket, we send them the Zoom link a couple of days before and everything. When they log on to the waiting room, 15 minutes before, we can see them. So what we're doing, little backstage secret, we, the 3 performers, me, Mark and Kerry, we are WhatsApping each other saying, please can I have that family, because they look really fun. So in the waiting room, we are genuinely kind of looking at different households. A lot of people have their cameras on, which is obviously the best scenario. But some people can turn their camera off if they don't want to get involved. But yeah, so it's a bit of potluck, to be honest with you. You know, you can kind of tell, I think, from a lot of experience who might be good fun. But when we go to that screen and say, OK, we'd like to go to the Elliot household, can you unmute yourselves? The honest answer is we have no idea what they're going to be like saying, whether we're going to have to mute them and get rid of them. So it's potluck, but thankfully, literally every show, the people that we have chosen have really got involved. And actually, because Kerry had done quite a few Zoom shows herself, when I did the first night, I'd never done a Zoom show. So I was a little bit more anxious than normal. but it works surprisingly well. You know, they can see that the props and everything. I got some extra lights and things. So, you know, as long as we can talk to them and see them and ask them questions, you can actually do an awful lot of magic surprisingly well. So, yes, it's great fun. And of course, everyone's a little bit nosy. So it's a bit like Gogglebox. You can see into everyone's houses, which is quite fun.
Yeah. It's, as Rich said, basically we literally go through and then have a look. I kind of know what I'm looking for with my tricks that I'm doing, like, you know, people that I'm picking and things. So then, and then we send some frantic messages backwards and forwards, saying, don't pick them, don't pick them. But yeah, basically we just pick anyone. What I do is I write down on a big piece of paper in front of me, because once I start my act, I'm stood against my wall so you can see me. So I can't be going up to the screen and going through, whereas Rich has his, you have your mouse on the desktop, don't you? So you can scroll through a bit easier. So I have everybody's name on a list and I have numbers next to them about, you know, so what order I'm going to choose them in and stuff. But then I have like a whole other list of names as well as reserves, just in case they can't unmute themselves, or just in case, you know, if we did come to somebody and then they say, no, I don't want to, but nobody ever has. But in all honesty, I think it's different. If we were to get you up on stage, that's a little bit different because you're in front of everybody on a stage in a situation that you're not comfortable in. If we ask you to help and you're sat on your settee in your front room, you're comfortable. So I think there's that kind of side to it where you're not bringing them out of their comfort zone, really. You know, so it's, I think people go with it more. And we do say to them, you know, if they desperately don't want to be picked, then just to have their cameras off, and that's fine. And then we won't choose them. So, yeah. So we try and make it fair so that, you know, we know if people want to be picked or not.
And they seem to be really keen, don't they? A lot
yeah,
of
they
them.
Do.
Yeah.
There was one family and they changed their login name to Please Pick Me.
Yeah, they did.
So, you know, which is great. So if people do that, you know, I mean, obviously they can't all do that because we don't know who they are, but they let us know that they want to be chosen.
Yeah, and with so many listeners out there who adore magic, with so many television programmes now showcasing the art form, in talent shows such as Britain's Got Talent, and magicians like Penn and Teller, and then on the theatre side you've got Mischief Theatre, who have just done Magic Goes Wrong. From your own experiences as magicians, what advice would you give to those listeners who may want to tread the waters in magic?
So I think to start off with, obviously they need to be able to do some magic. So you can buy books on card magic. There may well also be a local magic club, so it's worth Googling in your area to see if there's a local magic club that accepts members. Usually local magic clubs are very welcoming and you can often, you know, visit without necessarily having to join, you know, just go along and see what it's like. They're usually very, very welcoming to new members. And it's just a case of performing as much as you can, really. I don't think there's any substitute for just sheer experience. If people were thinking about doing it professionally over a bit of time, then I would also add to that studying sort of acting techniques and how to get on with people, social skills. So it's not just about, if you're doing it for a living, it's not just about being a performer. It's also very important to be able to get on with people and interact with people. You know, not just the magic, the personality and the social skills become incredibly important if you're going to do it for a living. So, you know, do try and read books like that as well on, you know, presentation skills. You know, I've got some acting books and things like that. So use the magic stuff, get the magic books and the magic DVDs, but as well as that, try and, you know, work on presentation skills and social skills as well if you're going to be presenting for real.
I can't add anything to that, really. That's exactly spot on. My thing would just be look out for a magic club that's near you, search out some magicians, get in touch with them, you know, see if they can point you in the right direction of stuff, but, and just practice.
And actually that's true. When I first started, I did email a few magicians and I was surprised at how much help I got, you know, just literally emailing a couple of people. So if someone's stuck, reach out to us, email us. We can often recommend, particularly if we know at which point of their journey they're in, you know, if they're a beginner, we can recommend different books or DVDs. If they know a lot of magic and they're looking to do it as a job, we can probably point them in the right direction. So yeah, don't be afraid to reach out to magicians. You can also join the magic circle, of course. Even if you're a young person, you can join that club as well, which is fantastic. So yeah, if you're stuck, just email a few magicians and see if you get some replies. But you know, most people in the industry are very willing to help, you know, because they love talking about magic and they love talking about tricks. So you're likely to get some help if you email someone.
And so, guys, my final question for today, usually on the Stagey Place we'd ask our guests where their Stagey Place may be. It may be a theatre that they go and watch theatre in regularly, or a theatre that they've worked in that they've really enjoyed. For this episode, as magicians, what I'd like to ask you is, do you have a favourite magic trick that you like to perform to audiences, whether or not that's in person or virtually? And why have you chosen this specific magic trick as your favourite?
That is a really good question. In all honesty, I don't know if I have a particular favourite, because it depends on the group that I'm with. When you're doing close-up, it's very different to doing stage, so you can kind of read them and kind of get something from them. I do quite like mind reading with them, because that sometimes freaks people out. I have a rope trick that I do, which I love doing, and obviously I can't do it at the moment because it's not one that I can do online, because I need somebody else to be able to cut the rope and things like that. So I think I'll look forward to being able to do that one again when I'm allowed to sort of back out there with people. I guess that's maybe one of my favourite ones, but yeah, I always find that a really tough one, because it really does depend on the group and what you're getting from them and things. So I'd probably say mind reading and my rope trick. There we go, I've narrowed it down to two, is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
For me, probably if someone said to me, you can only do one trick for the rest of your life, I do have it's quite a sort of a classical magic trick, really, with a cup and a ball, where you have to try and guess where the ball is at any one time. Paul Daniels had a fantastic routine of that. It's a trick that I've done for years and years and years, and developed it, including all the lines and the jokes and everything with it. So I'm particularly proud of that one. So, you know, it's a great trick for tables or groups. And I do it in a Zoom show, actually. So, I think if I had to choose, that would be my favourite, the cup and ball trick.
And he does it really, really well.
Amazing.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, Richard and Kerry, I'd like to thank you so much for coming on to the Stagey Place today. I really feel like this episode, more than any that we've done in the series so far, has shown the positives of what lockdown has done for you as magicians. Being able to take your stage show in Evening of Deception and turn it into a virtual Zoom show with Evening In of Deception, I think it's a really positive take on what lockdown has done for you guys, even if you can't be on stage yourselves. If you at home would like to follow Richard or Kerry on social media, Richard is at Gloss Magician and Kerry is at Kerry Magician. Those are both on the Instagram platforms, and on their profiles you can see more information about their virtual tour of Evening In of Deception. Kerry or Richard, I didn't know if one of you wanted to chat about the tour and the dates and venues that you'll be going to over the next few weeks.
Sure, so we have our next show is Tuesday the 4th of August at 7:30, and that is for Worcester Swan Theatre. Then on the 7th of August we've got another show for Paignton Theatre. On the 11th of August, we've got a Zoom show for Castleford, and on the 18th, it's for Wirral Theatre. But I think it's important to remind people that obviously you can be wherever you are and buy a ticket, so pick a date. Just know that you're choosing a different theatre to support depending on which date you're picking. But yeah, we've got quite a few dates coming up, and if there's anyone in the theatre industry that would love our show to perform, you know, for their theatre, please do get in touch, email Kerry or myself. You know, we'd love to do this more. We love doing it. So yeah, if there's anybody out there listening and think they like the sound of it for their show, you know, small theatre or big theatre, please get in touch. We'd love to do it for you guys as well.
We've got two more dates in as well, because the Everyman have just booked us back again. So we've got the 1st and the 4th of September for the Everyman in Cheltenham. So we're going to be back there again. So that makes us very happy.
Oh, that's amazing news. Well, once again, Richard and Kerry, I'd like to thank you so much for joining me on the Stagey Place today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Elliot. Thanks for giving us a chance to talk about the show.
And there we go there, listeners, that was the latest episode of the Stagey Place with today's guests Richard Parsons and Kerry Scorer. If you've enjoyed what you've heard in today's episode and you are new to the Stagey Place, then you can follow us on Instagram at the Stagey Place for all the latest news and announcements for future guests. Do stay tuned, as this Friday we are launching our brand new four-part mini-series, Fringe Fridays, where we are talking to artists and companies from all across the country who bring their work to the Fringe festivals every year. Where in this Friday's episode, we'll be chatting to Midsummer's Theatre Company, who celebrate 5 years since taking Jarek Adams' Two Up, Two Down, One Back to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 2015. Until then, though, listeners, I've been Elliot, and you've been listening to The Stagey Place.